It was an idyllic, spring-like Valentine's Day morning. People were strolling about in the sunshine of a brisk day. Many were pushing baby strollers. It was part of a spirit of celebration in this upbeat, diverse crowd. Everything seemed so right with the world in this beautiful setting. People were laughing, smiling, even singing. Children of various ages, shapes, sizes, and colors were playing football in the grass. Most of them were wearing jerseys number 15 or 87. 15, of course, being the number of the quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, 87 being Travis Kelce's number. That's because they had all come, almost a million people, to celebrate the Kansas City Chiefs' win in the Super Bowl. There were many so-called Swifties in the crowd. Many little girls were sitting on their father's shoulders, hoping that they might get a view of Taylor Swift, although they didn't know she was already back in Australia. The Kansas City Chiefs had just left the stage when all of a sudden, pop, 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 the sound of gunshots rang out. As one Kansas City newspaper described it, the day and even this golden time in Kansas City was shattered by an all too familiar American tragedy descended upon them. The never-ending cycle of shots fired by lunatics and mass casualties and terrified throngs scrambling for safety and the chilling sound of endless sirens. At least one person was killed, 21 others were shot, including 9 children, ages 6 to 15. And once again, it became another 21st century version of the day the music died. Shocking as it was, the evil and sadness of the day isn't really considered a surprise by our country anymore. It seems to be the cost of living in America today. And to make matters worse, we just can't seem to be able to do anything about it. This experience of unbridled joy and deep mourning is but another expression of what I think Jesus was describing in our scripture this morning in the parable of the wheat and the tares. Now, Jesus didn't just make up this story about some mysterious enemy sowing tares or weeds in another man's field of wheat just so he could preach a sermon on the Last Judgment, although that is certainly an important part of the message. But Jesus is pointing out how we have always and will always have good and bad people and good and bad things happening side by side in this world. Good and evil, joy and sorrow, tears and laughter are both a part of life's experience. And in fact, it's the good that makes us realize what's bad. And it's the bad that makes us realize what's good. So why did Jesus tell this parable? Was it because one of his disciples said, "Master, why do bad things happen to good people?" Was it because that they saw, in spite of the good that Jesus was doing, they also saw all the bad things that were going on? Was it because they were growing uneasy with the different kinds of people who were mixing into the crowd following Jesus? Sinners, social outcasts, prostitutes, embezzlers, even scribes and Pharisees. Some of the disciples obviously wanted to do some weeding out, separating the tares from the good wheat, purging the crowd of those who didn't deserve to be around Jesus. You know, ever since I began as a minister, I have heard people criticize the church for being full of hypocrites, people who profess one thing but don't live it out. And in the past, I have argued against that idea and defended the church by saying that church members are not hypocrites. They're just people who acknowledge that they're sinners and they're seeking to do better. That nobody's perfect. Nobody perfectly lives up to the high ideals of Christianity. But at least the people who go to church are trying to do better. But when I read this parable of Jesus about the wheat and the tares, I would take a different point of view now. And I would say, yes, there are some hypocrites in the church. The good and the bad are all mixed together. But who are the hypocrites? And who can tell? Some of you might think, some of the people you might think are hypocrites really aren't. And some of the people you think are not hypocrites really might prove to be so in the long run. And what Jesus describes for us in this parable is that we cannot tell the difference, and nobody will know for sure until the time of harvest, which means the day of judgment. Should the doors of the church be open to anybody and everybody, allowing all who want to be a part of the church to join in? Some churches and some Christians would say no. And during the course of my lifetime in ministry, I have seen churches that have said there are people not welcome in the church. Back in the 60s, divorced people were not welcomed in the church. Also, we've gone through the round of racism and whether blacks were welcome in the church or gays or adulterers, murderers, addicts, embezzlers. Some people would say they all should not be a part of the church. And they would want to vote them out, purge the church of them if they could. They want to pull out the tares along with the wheat. Others like me would say, let them be a part of the church. All who believe in Jesus Christ and are trying to straighten out their lives should be welcome. And none of us has the right to judge who is sincere and who is not. I say that all should be a part of the church for at least two reasons. Number one, because there is no such thing as a perfect person. Like Paul said, all of us have sinned and fallen short. If we didn't allow sinners in the church, there wouldn't be anybody here. Number two, because the church is a hospital for sinners, not a refuge for saints. As Jesus himself said, it's the sick who need the doctor, not the well. I came to call the righteous, not the righteous, but I came to call sinners. A number of years ago, somebody told me how they had attended a very large and prominent church. And standing at the front door greeting everybody who came in were three men who had served time in prison. Were they hypocrites, or were they acknowledged sinners hoping to be rehabilitated? Who knows, except God? Some would be shocked, and the one who told me about it was shocked. Others, like me, would think it's wonderful. As Jesus said, judgment comes only at harvest time. This parable of the wheat and the tares is a teaching about the last judgment. It has at least three different parts of its meaning to us. Number one, it means that it's a warning to us not to judge other people. It's also a warning that in time judgment will come, but God does the judging. And the third message in this parable, the one I want to really focus on, is that good and bad exist together, side by side in this world. And sometimes it's hard to tell them apart. To better understand this parable, I might point out that back in Jesus' time, there was a certain weed called bearded darnel, or what we refer to as the tares, which was poisonous and caused dizziness when it was eaten. What made this weed especially a problem was that it was impossible to distinguish it from the real wheat, especially in the early stages of growth. When the wheat and the tares grew together in a field, their roots became intertwined, and so it would be impossible to separate them without pulling up both plants, or at least damaging the wheat. The only safe way to separate the two was to wait until harvest time, where when both were fully grown, the wheat was much taller than the tares. Now, Jesus didn't just make up this story about some mysterious person sowing weeds in another man's wheat field so he could preach a sermon about the Last Judgment, because it was a common thing back then for this to happen. If somebody had a grudge against somebody else, he'd go sow weeds, tares, in his wheat field. It was typically an evil act, much like a lot of the evil that goes on in our society today. If you're following in the scriptures a few verses later, beginning with verse 37, Jesus gives us his interpretation of the parable. He says, "The Son of Man," meaning Jesus, "sows the good seed. His field is the whole world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom. The tares are the children who belong to Satan, the wicked one. The enemy who sows the seeds is the devil. The harvest time is the end of the world, and the reapers are God's angels." So it is a parable about the last judgment, the apocalyptic vision of the end of time and the coming day of judgment. But to me, the real value of this parable right now, while you and I are living in this 21st century world, has to do with the problem of evil, the stubborn fact and mystery of sin in a God-created world. How do we understand and accept all these tragic events that keep happening in our world today? Bad things that happen to good people. You know, the parable doesn't explain the origin of evil, but it certainly points out the fact of evil, and that good things and bad things both are found in life. And it's that third point of this parable, about the two together, that I want to especially point out this morning. Nothing is perfect. Everything in this world has its good and bad aspects. You can take marriage and family life, for example. There's no greater joy than a good marriage and healthy family life. But while marriages may be made in heaven, they're lived out here on the earth. There is no greater joy than raising children if done right. But still, there are going to be trials and tribulations, tough times, as all of you who are parents know very well. Marriage and family life are under constant stress and tension and even attack in our world today. The good and the bad go together. Therefore, it's important for us to learn how to do it right, to enjoy the good and navigate our way through the bad, knowing that the day of reaping will come. Think about any other area of life and how they contain both good and bad, joys and sorrows, hardships as well as wonderful times. Think about, for example, the miracles of modern medicine and how today's drugs can save lives. But at the same time, they can also have some very difficult side effects. The same thing is true with our work, with our jobs. I doubt if anybody enjoys his work more than I do, but there are some things about it that I would have to say often seem like drudgery or an irritation. And that's why some people are constantly changing jobs or changing marriage partners, thinking that they can find the perfect situation. But how much happier we would be if we would just listen to what Jesus says in this parable, that the good and the bad exist together, and just accept it and make the most of it. How many times have I had someone tell me, you know, my neighbor on one side is really wonderful. My neighbor on the other side, however, is not so wonderful. Or what about growing older? A lot of us who are doing that can tell you that it has both its good and bad aspects. The aches, the pains, the illness that come, that's part of it, but it beats the alternative. And as you grow older, you experience the joy of watching your children and then your grandchildren grow up and get married and have their families. You enjoy lifelong friendships. Those are the best kinds. You gain wisdom the longer you live, and you discover as you get older what really is important in life. And it's not necessarily the same thing we thought was so important when we were younger. So life will never be trouble-free. But the secret to life is realizing this and then learning how to live with imperfections. As one wise sage put it, the beginning of wisdom is the acceptance of imperfection. So as Christians, how do we cope with the evils of life? Jesus says you don't have to try to get rid of the tares, for you might damage the wheat as well. But leave the tares among the wheat until harvest time and learn to live with it. Focus your attention on the wheat, on what is good, and build it up. And on the day of harvest, the tares will be destroyed. In other words, our approach to life should be a positive one rather than a negative one. Don't try to get rid of everything and everybody that's bad. Burned out, the hypocrites, whatever, don't want to do that. Don't waste your time. Only God has a right to pass that judgment. But spend your time spreading with word and the way you live a positive gospel and living a positive life, and then leave the rest up to God. The only way to truly destroy evil is to overcome it with good. Amen.